right. Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by me, Robbie Earle, and by my good longtime friend from work, Kyle Schoenewill. And this week, we are capping off a just mega week here, the most mega of mega weeks, with the Loki Season 2 finale.
Yes.
Some folks are maybe still watching the Marvels at this moment or getting out from the Marvels, and that's a whole thing that we already covered, I think, on an episode that released a couple hours ago. Mm-hmm. So if you haven't heard that yet and you have seen the Marvels, you can go find that wherever you listen to podcasts. But
oh my gosh.
My
brain's not totally here, to be honest. I don't know what just happened to it, but I'm picking up my brain from the floor still. And I'm trying to figure it out.
There are a couple things I need to say from the top, and then this is one that's, I think, going to be hard for me to figure out how to categorize.
Yep.
Because there are so many different ways to go about discussing this episode.
Okay.
I'm not going to shoot off like 12 points and then make you figure out which order you should respond to them in, which is my temptation. So I'll just at least take it one at a time. But the first thing that I have to say is I really think that there's just no argument for me that Loki is anything but the number one Marvel Disney Plus show at this point. I've been on the fence, and I've gone back and forth between a few, namely this and WandaVision, and I just think at this point, season two specifically...
Holy cow, this is not like you to have a hot take and also to rank on the night of an hour...
I know. It's just... here's the thing, though. I actually think that just kind of shot for shot, beat for beat across... this show, like having rewatched Loki season one coming into this, and then for me, Loki season two is just unquestionably better. Like the big thing hanging out there for me was the finale, and this finale was just mind-blowingly good. Like in so many ways, like the comics fan in me, the MCU fan in me, and then just the person that was trying to watch this as a TV show separate from all that.
And it's just crazy. And the outfit fan in you to get to see Loki in the horns.
I was so hoping that you were thinking of me in that moment.
I was thinking of you because we just talked last night for so long about that. Oh my gosh.
That's true.
Last week we talked about, I said, I don't know that I ever need to see him in the cape and horns again. That's what I said. And you said, well, I could go for it. And then we talked about the outfit so much last night from the Marvels. And so I immediately thought of you. Sorry.
And we talked about how much, like what I loved about season two, and I think what you loved too so far, is that it felt like the necessary evolution of what season one was, in that like if season one was kind of setting up the problem, it felt like season two was actually delving into how Loki fits into that and fits into the solution. Whereas the first season, we got a lot of kind of psychological Loki, like we got into his head and motivations, but I feel like it wasn't a series that necessarily showed us why it was Tom Hiddleston's Loki that needed to be the one at the center of this kind of He Who Remains story. And I just, that's I think the big thing for me here is it was like everything felt flawless in terms of the execution in this kind of classic like peak phase three era way that you and I talk about when I think of something like Civil War that just feels kind of perfect, at least if you look at it like scene for scene, even if you don't step back and think that it's the perfect story or whatever. Like this has that element, but also for me has this like just it feels so well thought out, mm-hmm. so intentional at every level, not just within this season, but the series as a whole. It's like this, it makes so much sense to me that this is the first project that they haven't had any reshoots on.
True.
That was exactly what they thought it would be after the first season ended, because it almost feels like a necessary component of the story. Like, it doesn't feel like where they were going to go next after they realized that Loki was successful, because that's not what happened. It was like, this was, it makes perfect sense. And it's this like totally fitting thing for the character, for the story in the MCU that he's had in general, for the story here. And it's just, I truly think, and this is the end of my initial rant here, but like, Candace watched it with me tonight and I turned to her and said, this is just the best thing Marvel has done in a long time.
Holy cow, dude.
I stand by it. I am blown away. I I'm going to let you go because I don't even know really where to go from there.
Me either. I'm just stuck now.
I have not felt this way about a project or like a whether it's an episode or a film or whatever from the MCU in a bit. And I'm going to have to kind of figure out what that means and what to do with that personally.
Holy cow.
In the meantime, I'll flip it over to you.
I don't even know who you are right now. I loved it.
Same.
I loved it. Why am I in such a weird mood? Is it from a long week? Is it because the Mobius ending is kind of sad to me and I can't figure out what to do with that? Quality-wise, it's obviously unbelievable. I'm going to agree with you 95%, and then just that last 5% is I'm not in an emotional place where I can,
sure,
where I can say that it's better than WandaVision for me, but I need to process, okay? Let me come back to that in a couple of weeks. We'll do that from like a way zoomed out perspective. Yeah, there were no lulls either, you know? Everything not only felt intentional, there wasn't ever a sidestep for a quick second or like, oh, what are we doing here? Not just in the episode tonight, but in the entire series. And then if you're basing it off chill-inducing moments, and to your point about I haven't felt this way in a while, I'll say I literally jumped on Discord for 1 second because when Loki finally time skipped back far enough back to the He Who Remains conversation, I immediately paused it and said to Annika, oh my gosh, like I don't curse, but this is the most I'll ever curse. I like now am finally understanding what's happening. He's going to go back to that conversation and make it so that he doesn't die. And that's when I was like, that was as mind blowing for me as a moment in a while. So I'm with you there.
Yeah.
That for me was like, oh, how did I not see that coming? And then like, as he paused it, I have chills right now, when he paused it and then like called He Who Remains his bluff for a second. How do you know this isn't the first time we've had this conversation? And then He Remains as the like, chalk it up, one for you kind of thing. That for me, that moment was like, yeah, it was so mind blowing. So I did feel that as heavily as I've felt something in a while, for sure.
That's so funny. I had the same. I was like, oh, they're going back to the end of season one. And it that's what I mean whenever I say it's like, there were some people, I didn't hear many say this, but I heard a few people, even as I was going back and rewatching and helping get Greg's refresh and reflect posts out on Substack, I saw that there were some reviews of the Loki season one finale at the time that thought that the He Who Remains of it all was just such a late left turn that it didn't feel like a kind of cohesive part of the season as a whole.
Just zip it with that.
No, I never felt that. You were there for me coming out of that season one finale. But I do think, you know, insofar as people feel that way or felt that way, I think that that's what I mean when I say this is such the necessary piece of that, where everything that felt like it maybe wasn't fully thought through or didn't make total sense, I think does now to me. Like, I mean, I say this coming off of like a mind-bendy episode, but looking back at season one, like some of the questions we had that we had thought, like, have they just not really worked out a theory of how all this functions? Because it seems like there are some paradoxes here and some inconsistencies. Or is there just, there's more that we don't know yet that we will know? And I feel like this makes me feel very much like it's the latter.
Okay. Just because I'm wanting to know this, and I'm sure people are wanting to know this, can we pause on just the critical talk for a second and ask some really safe space type questions here? Because that was as wild and mind-bending and confusing as ever. So I'm just going to ask some stuff and don't judge, okay?
I mean, I may not know.
I guess I'm not just asking you for the answer, but just to the entire world here. These are the things I'm processing.
Right.
Just to be totally sure what happened. So Loki goes back and back and back and figures out he cannot stop it no matter what. And then they get to that key scene where they do stop the loom, but then it still breaks because there's an infinite variable. They can't account for that. They're screwed, whatever. So he goes back even further and realizes the only way to stop this from happening is to let He Who Remains live, because there's no scenario where if you take him out, it just doesn't work. So then the only way to do that is to stop Sylvie. But Sylvie is not going to let him do that. So the only way now is either let Sylvie kill He Who Remains, in which case all the loom will have a hard time keeping up. It will eventually break. Uh-huh. And then all of the other multiversal branches will spaghetti out. Or the other option is kill Sylvie. And then you wouldn't have the problem with He Who Remains, and the TVA could run as He Who Remains had set it up. So far, that's all correct, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Although I think, and you may have said this, but if the loom broke down, then
that's what He Who Remains clarified, is that that was actually a failsafe, right? So I hadn't gotten there yet.
Right.
So that's what Loki thought. Okay, but then He Who Remains says, actually, what's going to happen is the TVA will be wiped out and all of the other branches will be wiped out, but the sacred timeline will exist. It's a failsafe, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. So then Loki's really screwed, because either he goes back to exactly where they started, except this time no TVA, he loses his friends, and all the other branches are gone. They all spaghetti. Or he has to kill Sylvie.
Mm-hmm.
So then he goes back again to Sylvie and explains to her, I have to kill you or I have to let it happen. Which, by the way, all that pausing stuff gave me chills that he can now control it. We'll get into that in a second.
Oh, right.
So then in that conversation with Sylvie, he figures out that there's a different way to do it, which is call He Who Remains as bluff. Blow it up yourself. So now there's not even something as a failsafe for the sacred timeline. The whole thing is going to be toast, but then he can use his magic to go into the Citadel, weave these weird vines and reignite them and basically bring like a tree of multiversal life. So Loki thinks, this time I'll do it better and I'll prune all the infinite versions of Kang. So the TVA's new function will only be to prune Kang variants. Am I understanding all of that correctly?
I think so.
So huge questions here now. Before the huge questions, I love that, as one of our commenters says, Loki finally found like a glorious purpose. Like, that is pretty crazy.
Oh, yeah.
After all of that. The episode was called Glorious Purpose, which was just amazing.
Right. Which then you look at like the Ouroboros of it all, and the fact that the first episode and the last episode of the series potentially are both called Glorious Purpose.
But Mobius now doesn't have a spot, right? There's no spot on the timeline for him, because every timeline that is branching has a version of Mobius, right? Like, he went back to the timeline where he was and he's staring at it. What are we meant to take away from that? Is he placeless?
This is getting into the weeds of the time travel mechanics, which is not my strength as much as it is certain folks in our Discord, I think. But I think that there was an episode or a line in episode 5 where whenever Loki was trying to convince him to come with him to get Don to come with him to go save the TVA. He said something like, you'll basically be able to come back and like step in, like step back into this at any moment. Like even if it's just the exact moment you left, your kids will never know that you're gone. So I think I'm not thinking about how what happened in this episode would impact that. And obviously this is not the Mobius that came from that. Like this is original Mobius. So that messes with it a bit, but
can he like merge personalities?
Yeah, I think so. Cause they sort of showed that with Loki, like, which I thought was like, they gave us a lot of examples of him merging into the version of himself from that moment.
Right.
So it's like, he's wearing the same, like the wardrobe and looks the same. And so I don't know how Mobius would be able to do that, but my sense was that was the intention of like kind of that line in episode 5. And also like, I think he's just waiting, but I think he's going to like step into that life, or at least that was my sense.
Okay.
Cause otherwise it would be like a really weird, lonely, like stalking your own family.
Let time pass is what he says. That echoes all the way through the multiverse back to Loki sitting there. Okay. Another question. By the way, the 616 adjacent shout out, that's Quantumania, correct? That's the Kang from Quantumania he's referring
yes,
to.
Yeah.
And he says they were going to try to do something about it, but it got handled, right? Something like that.
Right. Yeah, which I love. And yeah. And you were talking about this on, I think, the Marvels episode about kind of the setting out the rules of some of this stuff. And you were talking about wanting to know the difference between like dimensions and realms and timelines. And isn't what they said it was a 616 adjacent realm to describe the quantum realm?
Oh gosh, did he say realm? I don't know if he said realm.
I thought so, but maybe not. Maybe I'm reading that back into it. But if either way, I think it has the same effect, just because the 616 adjacent is an interesting, like that. I think that that's going to come into play as we kind of follow up with the Doctor Strange stuff and look at like them going to the dark dimension and the fact that like an incursion's possible there, but it's also like clearly not like, an Earth accessible place. So we that's like such a small thing to not go down right now, but I think is a step towards the kind of cosmology that you were saying you were hoping for.
Then was your take on Ravonna that she was in the void, obviously, but that there is still an Eliath there about to eat her? Was that the purple?
I thought so.
So Loki in this new TVA is still going to have a void and still going to use Eliath. I'll say this just to reiterate, the entire like step-by-step nature of Loki becoming He Who Remains, like as I was putting that together, was blowing my mind. Like I loved right. every step of that. But my wife just texted me, and this is so good, by the way. She says, we absolutely need to make a Friends from Work T-shirt that just says "Let's grow together" because that's the new logo. That should absolutely that fits yeah. so perfectly with Friends from Work. We that's absolutely so should do that. Let's grow together. Let's grow this together.
Well, and it's like that. Also, I mean, you must have caught the world tree of it all.
Yes,
and that's
the symmetry
that,
there.
Like that's the kind of thing. Yeah, like that's the thing that I love so much. Like. Even, and then looking back on the stuff from this season, which by the way, Eric Martin, I'm so impressed with the episodes that he wrote specifically, I thought were so strong. And we talked about that some, I think last week, but just going back through and him and the writing team in general, like this was a really well thought out season that I think will make for a really good rewatch.
Oh, please,
because of things
to.
like the World's Fair, the little moment with them looking at Odin and Loki and Thor. Mm. Or no, not Loki, because it's Baldur.
Yeah, the Brave.
But I think that there's like a world tree as part of that diorama. And just like moments like that to kind of remind us that that is where Loki comes from, that he is ultimately this god from Norse mythology. And so it's not only feeling like it's kind of honoring where the series started, it feels like it's also honoring kind of where Loki starts, like in the original Thor when they first kind of lay out the world tree.
For sure. So the future of Kang, have you thought about that at all in the last 30 minutes? Like, are they going to be able to continuously prune all those branches? Are they going to be able to continuously prune like all the people that were meeting in that council of Kangs at the end of Quantumania? And or like, how does he come back and win now? Like, how does this lead into like Secret Wars or Kang Dynasty? They just eventually fail at pruning his branches?
Well, I think it would almost be the opposite. Like, I think that what would make more sense to me right now, and this is informed by the way that the Secret Wars comic is set up, but it's not that they fail to prune enough Kangs. I think it's more that there's some limiting factor that, like, for Secret Wars to happen in any way that is like the comics, and maybe it's not, maybe they're doing something totally different. But it kind of has to be a narrowing again, which is weird because in the comics, you start with an infinite multiverse and then it gets narrowed down and you kind of wind up with these last two universes battling it out. And that's kind of what triggers Secret Wars. But here we started with one universe, kind of, with a sacred timeline. And now I feel like it's going to balloon and then would have to cut back down if they follow the comics, which would mean, I think, not that Kang, one of them eventually gets loose, but maybe like I guess it goes back to the question about the incursions. If the incursions are some kind of thing that are occurring apart from Kang, then I wonder if those actually lead to a way for Kang to like seize an opportunity that's presented by either like the narrowing or some missing of something by Loki, or if it's just like Kang is, you're right, like actually going to get free somehow, get away from one of the TVA whoever's, and then he starts the multiversal war, which is the multiversal, like, is the multiversal war Secret Wars is like the other big question that I've been asking lately.
It's so trippy.
Well, they're just so, it's hard. Yeah. I mean, what I love about it is there are so many pieces that I just think things are going to have to go differently than they went in the Hickman run. And that's fun because that means it's hard to predict.
All right. What else on your 12-step plan that you wanted me to respond to?
Well, I do think, I mean, I really like this idea, though, of that being the TVA's purpose. Mm. Like, I think that makes a lot of sense.
That he can do it better.
Yeah. And well, and that they're like, that was the whole, like, even the moment when we see the TVA handbook, like, not appear in the Victor Timely window, and just like this idea that,
yes,
what he's just removing those variants from the equation, like, entirely, and then seeing,
yes,
like, I just didn't ever think about, like, it's because the whole thing was like, well, he wants to save the TVA, but the whole purpose of the TVA is to do the bidding of this person that we're realizing is like intent on being in control at best, and at worst, you know, is going to like destroy the entire multiverse. And so it solves both of those by not only allowing the TVA to exist, but also giving it a purpose that feels,
yes,
like legitimate.
Which I love.
And like an actual good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The full circle there. And yes, the change that Loki made. No doubt. Sorry, I'm still processing so much. Yeah, please.
So, because I do wonder if they're pruning Kangs, when you prune someone, they go to the void.
Mm-hmm.
So
are they all going to be there? What,
are they all going to be there?
Or like you said, though, like how often are they actually pruning the Kang versus like in the case of Quantumania, it just worked out for them. He went somewhere else or got killed or something.
Right.
Or like in the case of Victor Timely, just don't give him the book. Now he's not pruned, but he just will never know. Kind of thing. So maybe there's not that much actual like going through a portal, stabbing him with the stick and sending him there, maybe. Or does the Council of Kangs at the end of Quantumania actually take place in the void? Is that maybe where they all are or something?
Oh, that would be crazy.
I'm not saying I don't think it's that, but.
No, because I think we like see people appearing. Although I guess they can maybe be using their like Kang tech.
That's true. They're kind of popping in and out, aren't they?
But I think that like that's a good.
I guess what I'm struggling with is it felt like this episode kind of had Loki win. Whereas the end of season one was definitely a huge cliffhanger for He Who Remains has got this ultimate plan. But Loki kind of beat him here, right? And so I'm kind of wondering, is that a perfect off-ramp for them to get away from Jonathan Majors? Or do they have a plan where he now gets around that? And it's...
You know, that's a really good question. Because wasn't the rumor going around that Marvel was going to... Something about the finale was going to lean so heavily into...
So 1 minute after the finale aired, Dave Gonzalez, our friend who we just interviewed about his book, The Reign of the MCU... Uh-huh. He retweeted that exact quote from a higher up. What was the word that was used? I'll have to find that. But yeah, he basically called the bluff. Like, this is why you can't lean in to these articles and believe everything you read. Cause yeah, the word, it was the F word, but he said like Marvel is effed because they've seen the finale and how are they going to backtrack? Well, that's not at all the case. That wasn't at all the case. And we know nothing was reshot. So that was literally just made up, or the person has no concept of what the show was even about. Because I think that's what's kind of taking me aback right now is like, if nothing else, it was maybe the opposite. Where like, if they wanted, that could be the end of Kang. They could just kind of end it there.
Right.
Now, obviously, if they don't want to end Kang, then they could still have a lot of things they come up with that he got around it, or he still foresaw that, or, you know, whatever. Right.
And I think that, like, the intention of it would certainly be for that to happen. Like, and I think that they're even setting that up in a way that feels very comic booky, where you can kind of defeat, and we've talked about the MCU not doing this enough, but, like, Kang is such a great candidate for it. Like, defeat the villain, and then know that the villain's going to come back, and then you're going to have to figure out a way to beat him or however many iterations.
I've thought about that a lot ever since you educated me on Kang, that he is a human and he loses like hundreds of times, but just keeps going back and finding something different and blah, blah, until he wins, which felt so much like Loki in this episode.
Well, and I think that's what I loved is... The line whenever Loki first meets him and he's like, you're just a man, and you can tell it's this humbling thing for him with the way he's viewed himself and the way he viewed humans. And then now that there's this person that's just a guy that has this much control over him.
Yeah.
Like, not only is he not in control of himself, it's just like a person from Earth that's in control of everything he's ever done. And I like the, again, it's like what we were saying earlier, this edge that we were getting more of and more of Loki here, where you're remembering that like kind of scary, like not just like malicious, but just resourceful Loki. And so like that moment you were talking about where it's like you realize that it's that He Who Remains is not the one that's calling the shots anymore.
Oh.
That like Loki actually knows more than he does.
Oh, yes. That moment
that's
was
what
so
I
good.
Love. Yeah. Well, and I thought that's like what the whole episode was for me. It was like, and that's like the costume of it all, like that moment, just the way that it looked so like mythical at the end, like in a way that does feel like, I think Neil on our Discord said this so well when he said it was literally transcendent because it transcended the genre that it was, which was sci-fi, into straight up fantasy. And that's a hard thing to do, but that's what the best Thor comics have always been. And I think that's why the comic fan in me, aside from all the Al Ewing stuff, which, you know, we've talked about some, and I'm sure we'll talk about more with Loki as the god of stories. Aside from all that, just like classic kind of like Thor Loki comics, this feels like the most that's ever been channeled for me. Like, and that's not, I'm not ranking things. I'm just saying,
I love
like
it.
That aspect, I don't think has ever shown through as effectively as it did in that last, like, I feel about that last bit of the Loki finale we just saw, like we did about the last like 8 seconds of No Way Home, where it's like, that's like a little slice that I just think is in and of itself worth dissecting.
The last 8 seconds. I'll tell you what, man, when Loki paused time and called his bluff, it just, that got me going so intensely. We'll be right back. Thank you for everyone who's watching live on YouTube. More on that in a second. And thanks for everyone who's been partaking in the Friends from Work Mega Week. It is Thursday night that we are doing this right now live on YouTube. We have a Marvel's initial reactions episode. It's an hour and 38 minutes long to that film. So if you're walking out of the theater there, you can listen to that episode. I put out a friendly reminder / screen recap earlier this week to catch up before you see the movie. And then on Wednesday, we released a public service announcement, kind of trying to get your mind in the right frame of mind before you go see the film, just given all this stuff that's kind of happened, all the peripherals that's happening around Marvel on Twitter and whatnot right now. So all of that is at your disposal. Then this episode will be edited and ready tomorrow night. And then tomorrow night, if anyone's interested, I'm going to be finishing my live stream of Spider-Man 2. I'm going to do the whole rest of the game at 8 p.m. tomorrow night. So that will kind of conclude our Friends from Work Mega Week. But wherever you are in the process of joining in on this Mega Week, if you're just finding this podcast, if you've been listening for years, we're so thankful you made this a part of your day. So thank you so much. It means the world to us. One of our listeners right now on YouTube brought up an interesting point. What was your take on why zoom in on the pyramid when Renslayer is in the void? Was that totally just a random Easter egg of like they pruned one of the pyramids, ha ha ha? Or is that tied at all? Is that tied to Rama Tut at all?
I wonder if that is tied to Rama Tut. I mean, that would fit into the idea that the Kangs are being pruned and kind of assembling in the void. Because the reason I was thinking about that is you talked about the purple glow, and yeah, that could be Eliath, but you know, purple is also kind of the color of the Kangs, which is an alternate title for King.
Another listener says, "Here's a theory: Renslayer in that void is still alive, and maybe there are Kangs there, and together they weaponize Eliath and kind of basically return back the tide." I just thought it was really interesting to show that one shot of Ravonna. I was like, oh yeah, she's in the void. Right. I kind of forgot about that. But then to have the giant glowy purple thing and her face look shocked, but not show us that is interesting. Maybe it's a special effects budget thing and they don't want to show Eliath and it costs a bunch of money, a la She-Hulk. Or there's more mystery there. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure someone's read into that. One question that I did have about that same scene, though, I'm sure you noticed that she was standing on the same for all time, always.
Right.
I was thinking it was the same thing that like Mobius was standing on in the center of the TVA floor. Because it's right before he goes back.
Oh, gosh. I got to watch it again. I thought it was kind of glowing almost.
I mean, maybe. I recognized because they made a point to zoom in on it in that final Mobius scene in the TVA. And so, and then they zoomed in on it with Renslayer, which then made me think, like, does that mean that the TVA has been pruned already? Like that,
oh gosh,
that this has happened before? And then there's the question that I think we still maybe have answered, maybe not. I'm curious to hear people's thoughts on this too, but I feel like we've never quite figured out when the multiversal war, the stuff that we've seen in season two with Kang and Renslayer originally, like if that occurred in the...
Oh yeah, good point.
Like in the, like it's in the past, obviously, because we see like the, you know, the wall behind that stuff with He Who Remains, like the behind the Timekeeper mosaic stuff.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like does that matter? Like it can the past also be the future when we're talking the TVA? Like if one thing's impossible, is it all impossible kind of a deal? Because if so, then like I guess what I'm asking is Renslayer going to like is this when she like starts her like military campaign with He Who Remains that he's later saying, you know, he was so thankful for? Or did that all happen way back and then this is just a totally different thing? It's probably the second one, but I know that some people have been wondering if there's like a loop to all of it.
Well, again, I think it just all kind of comes back to what is their plan for that character, Kang, He Who Remains. Because I think you could answer then all those questions by just saying it's over. Like Loki won, they're pruning Kang variants, that's it. That multiversal war thing was in the past a long time ago before all this. Ravonna had her mind wiped, so she doesn't remember it. And now she's in the void. That's it.
Right.
If they wanted to pivot away. Or there's more out there, and it's all the things you just said, you know? And maybe there's more there.
Yeah, I mean, if they pivoted away, they would have to... I mean, they would still have to... Because they wouldn't pivot away from the multiverse in general.
I don't think they're doing that, by the way. That's not my leading theory. I think there's more here.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think if anything, I think it's set up. I hope that they move forward with Kang regardless. I think
I do too.
Just because I think I like the status quo as a place to start. That because of course the TVA is not going to be able to combat that person forever.
I don't want to just introduce someone new and kind of have all of this stuff be like just that's all it was. You know, like that was all we were leading up to was that. But yeah, no, oh gosh, I have so much more processing to do for some reason. That just really, really got me. And then like, did we ever finally get an answer on why Loki was time skipping in the first place? Was the understanding that He Who Remains is what set him on the time skipping path? Is that what that conversation?
I think so. Yeah. I think that's right.
Because his plan was make Loki time skip, and then he would eventually figure out how to control it. He'd eventually figure out that he couldn't stop the loom, and then he would eventually come back to this point and stop Sylvie from killing him. That's what he was convinced would happen. His ultimate plan was he will eventually come back here and stop Sylvie, and I won't be dead. Correct?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess so.
And then does he have one more like ace up his sleeve, you know? Or is that it? And Loki called his bluff and beat him.
Well, so that's a good question. Did we see what actually happened to He Who Remains?
When?
At the end of this episode.
See, that's the thing. I think, hear me out on this for a second. This is where it gets so trippy, time, you know, loop. I think Loki just removes himself from the situation. Sylvie then kills He Who Remains still.
Right. So,
then all of this stuff happens.
Okay, that's right.
And Loki gets back to the same scene where He Who Remains is dead and the loom is breaking. But instead of letting it overheat, shut down on its own, in which case, if that had happened, it would go back and revert just to the sacred timeline.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of that, he broke it himself, recharged it, and that's why the Citadel was still broken and there was no He Who Remains in it, because in that current timeline, He Who Remains is dead. So I think he just left the situation, and then Sylvie was going to kill him and then start that entire chain reaction. And then
because they're not bringing Victor Timely in, like, none of it's going to result in any way that He Who Remains, like, whatever plans he would have put into place can't come to fruition, because now they know to remove any parts or any variants, I guess, from any time stream.
And going back to our original question about Mobius, there must be some way that they can merge, like you're saying, because otherwise, what happens to adult Victor Timely there at the end? We saw kid Victor Timely, but they must be able to send him back and be like, you're going to live your whole life again. You won't remember any of this. Right?
Yeah, that's a good question, because we didn't see what happened to
Victor. Right, well, because we saw everyone else, right? Like Casey and B12, they stayed in the TVA, so they don't even have that problem. Mobius went back to his timeline, and that's where that question arises, like, can they merge? And then Sylvie's there too, going kind of like, I don't know, I'll do whatever.
Yeah. That's interesting that we didn't see what happened to Victor.
Unless I missed it. Again, it happened just 30 minutes ago, but
I didn't see it either. I mean, cause I would say that Loki wouldn't trust any version of him to be there, but Loki is not in the TVA per se. Like, that's what I'm also wondering. Does he have any contact with them? Like, what is the setup with the TVA now, as opposed to with He Who Remains, where no one even knew he existed or what the situation was? Like, how do they know? Like, did they independently decide to start hunting Kang variants, or did Loki communicate to them that that's what they should be doing?
I don't know. I don't know either.
Like, is Loki?
It's possible that Victor just went back to the timeline he was pulled from, right? Just no problem, no questions asked.
I mean, I guess, yeah. But then he would be, if he went back to the.
He'd be knowledgeable.
Like you're saying,
of all
he
this.
Was merged with like his childhood version.
Well, again, why show the childhood thing unless they're showing that now, because of their influence, he never even got to that point? Again, it's the loop thing every time.
Yeah, well, and the TVA is what throws it all off in terms of like how that works.
What do they call it? They call it the bootstraps paradox, right? That's
right,
what this is.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, I guess the idea being that whatever they did in the past kept Victor from ever even being able to come to the TVA.
Right, so he would never even know anymore.
Right.
So that older Victor that we saw would just have to be okay with basically saying, like, you're going to go back to your childhood existence and not know any of this happened. By the way.
Unless he's also pruned. Which, like,
what do you mean? That they pruned
like
him?
Unless they, yeah, I mean, like, because if at that point, wouldn't it be by like Loki season one variant rules if they're now like
send him
changing
to the void?
The timeline? I mean, I don't know. Like, I mean, isn't that what they're doing with all the Kangs? Or at least they're pruning all the Kangs,
yeah,
right?
I mean,
are they killing all the Kangs?
That's fascinating.
Isn't that worse?
Well, I just would. In the new way that Loki's running the TVA, I would have a hard time wrapping my mind around him then just sending him to the void eternally after all that. Because I feel like they kind of like had gotten close or whatnot. Back on the critical perspective for a second, off some of these crazy questions. I love Edge of Tomorrow. You know that Tom Cruise
right.
film?
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah.
And obviously,
no, same.
Shout out to that film. Shout out to the Doctor Strange first film, you know, with the Dormammu. I can do this over and over again. The whole first 10 minutes felt so Edge of Tomorrow, you know, like Loki knows nothing, can't fix it. But now if I just put in all the work, like, because I have infinite time, I'll just learn all the stuff, which I
like literal centuries.
Yeah.
But I also, like, I love that that's Loki doing that, who is like, he already kind of has a stretch concept of time because Asgardians live so long. So it like makes it a little bit more believable than if like we met. Like again, because part of the thing with He Who Remains is he's sort of insane because he's this guy that's lived for so long. But that's the other thing that I like here is like whenever you see Loki after all that, he's still Loki because that's not like as that's not as crazy of a thing for him. Like he's it's like the god side of it just making so much sense within that new context.
Well, and if you want to land the plane on this episode, that's another perfect example of how they brought this entire show full circle. So many ways, like you said earlier, right, like from a critical perspective, for Loki to show back up with the horns and actually have a throne and have a glorious purpose, and for Loki to be the one that has to make this like incredibly intense god-like decision, and for Loki to finally kind of be the one in control of letting those people have free will, which is, again, back to the first Avengers, the very thing he thinks no one should have, right? Like, it's life's greatest lie or whatever. But then also everything you said, like that Loki's Asgardian nature has prepared him for the work of having to figure out the science stuff. And then that he still could use magic ultimately at the end. Like, there are so many parallels here. And just the journey he's gone through as a character. And then, not to mention all of the technical aspect from this show of the visuals and the imagination and creativity. And then with no lulls in the writing and no lines that ever feel out of place in this entire season, really. Not a single line that I remember being like, oh, okay, what is he talking about kind of thing. No second felt wasted. It felt like it all was leading to this. This felt like the logical conclusion that we couldn't see coming, but only until we got there. And then when you got there, you're like, oh yeah, this makes so much sense. And then, the cherry on top of all this is it did feel so intentional to get to that point.
Right.
That nothing did feel shoehorned in and nothing felt redone. I'm with you. I'm needing so much more time to process from a different perspective, but I'm with you. It was incredible. It was incredible. And it's, again, combined with how much I enjoyed the Marvels the other night, just such a garbage dialogue that's happening right now. Like, if you're spending time discussing if the MCU is broken, you're missing the fun. We're living in the era of the fun. Like, tonight was incredibly special, and you're missing it. Not the listeners right now, but, you know.
Right. No. I mean, this was, this was just really excellent television, period. And that's, I think, I think that's really interesting because the dialogue in part has been that Marvel has, I've seen this kind of over and over again in different ways, that Marvel still knows how to do movies really well almost every time, but that they haven't quite figured out TV yet. And I think that looking back, like, that's a fair analysis. Like, I think more Disney Plus shows have had their uneven moments than not. And I think that happens more percentage-wise with the Disney Plus shows we've seen than it has necessarily with the films that we've seen, even post-Endgame. But I think it's really interesting, like, in this whole narrative that you're talking about, like, not only is something like something just as good as Loki, period, coming out. But for them to, I think, so thoroughly crack the TV code like they did here, where it's like the different things that we've isolated in all of these series as just feeling like for them, like little things that would pull certain series back from feeling like they were kind of full on prestige television, even if they were in moments. Like this whole season, I think I was kind of waiting with bated breath for the finale because I was so worried that it was going to drop the ball somehow. And then just looking at it and thinking,
but
like,
then when you got it, that's why I'm getting the hot take Robbie tonight.
Yeah, no, exactly. Because I was already like kind of preparing myself for how I would reflect on the season that I had thought was so great every episode so far if they didn't land it. And so I'm going to be fascinated to see what the conversation about this is. This could be one of those things also, like I'm recognizing these days that like maybe this is an episode that people are going to find to be generally unremarkable and maybe I'm just like,
no, I don't think
crazy.
So. I don't think so. I saw Twitter for like 2 seconds before I got over here. That's it. No, that's not going to happen. I don't think.
Okay. Well, that's good.
As a side note to that as well, really quickly, just really fast. I don't know if you saw the Marvels is actually creeping up in Rotten Tomatoes score. And there's just a part of me that thinks like, I do think in this current era, some of that stuff, like people have to get that out of their way, like get it out of their system, the people that are negative about it. And then once it's kind of the way, there are things like this that can kind of just rise a little bit. So I think it's going to be viewed very positively for sure. And people will be discussing what's going to happen for a long time on this. I wonder, was this finale now good enough to retroactively get people watching the show? Will this show have bigger numbers now for the following month than some of the other, like longer legs, basically?
Oh, wow, yeah.
You know what I mean?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Because people are going to start talking about it, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they should. Yeah, they should. Like, I came away from this feeling more like that than I have since. In terms of like immediately needing to, like if we hadn't been recording an episode tonight, I still probably would have had to call you, which is like a very like throwback kind of feeling.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I love it. So yeah,
I know it's, I had a couple things just because I know we're wrapping here in a second. A few final critical things,
please.
And then one more question. on the plot front.
Okay, here we go.
And then one final comics plug here.
All right.
So, well, you know, I'll start with that one because that's the one that I'll forget.
Okay.
I was looking
another
just
full
to make
hour.
Sure.
Here we go.
And Loki, Agent of Asgard, which is the series, the Al Ewing series that introduces Loki, the God of Stories, and it. I think we recommended this, Kyle, like way back when the original Loki was announced.
Look
like,
at you.
Because it seemed like this was where they were going to go. But like, I remember watching Loki and I was like, well, I'm glad we recommended it because it's a great comic and I can sort of see it. But this is where they really embraced that. And so I think for people that are curious, like, again, the comics don't answer the questions that the show is posing because the MCU never feels bound to do things the way the comics do, which is, I think, right. But Al Ewing is one of these very kind of cerebral writers that's also, like, he does a good job of balancing the sci-fi fantasy thing where it's, like, he can do the kind of systematic type storytelling that Hickman does, like the world building. But he's also kind of got that like tendency towards the mystical, which qualifies him really well for like Thor, which he's writing currently. And then obviously this Loki series. And I think makes it a really perfect thing for them to pull from for season two here. If people want to kind of get a better sense of what Loki's new role kind of could look like and the way that that run literally like dovetails into Secret Wars, because it basically it kind of did set up Secret Wars in a weird way. I would really recommend that you go read this, and I was just excited to talk about it because I saw that Organic Price Books,
yes,
our comics partner, they have the complete collection in trade paperback. It's 25% off currently. It is on back order, which I have found means they normally still get it out within at least 2 weeks. But I would say that also normally means that's, you know, there's a limited number now before it goes from being on back order to being out of stock. So I would recommend that people go there soon and buy that because it's a really great comic all the way through. And I think it might at this point, given this finale, be the best clue to how we could see some things playing out moving forward.
And if you're going to do that, click on the show notes. There's a link down there. Or at least just use our promo code, Friends From Work, all one word.
And because we never did that recommendation predated Friends From Work Plus, so we never got to actually do that in the Comics Corner. So I might even try to do that and maybe bring back on a friend of the pod, Al Ewing, to chat Loki, Agent of Asgard, which would be fun.
Hey, for real though, we'll talk about this so much in the upcoming weeks, but we'll have to do another episode or two on this week, like next week or 2 weeks from now. Like, I need more time to rewatch this and probably rewatch the Marvels, and then we need to come back from like a way zoomed out picture. Like, there'll be so much time to theorize, which, and that's another thing we'll get into. I think Marvel officially delayed their films today.
Yeah, I saw that.
Deadpool technically as of now is the only film releasing all of next year. In July. So if that sticks, we'll have a lot of time to come back to some of that stuff. So anyways.
And which, by the way, we're not going to get into all that now, although I'm sure we'll talk about it more soon. But I am so pleased with that decision. Like I think it's the right call. I was on the phone with my sister today, and it's funny because she follows, her husband is financial advisor, stocks guy, I guess. Okay. And so she follows Disney stock really closely because my sister's a big Disney fan. And I was kind of talking to her about from the Marvel perspective, what was coming up. And I was saying, I think given what's coming out this week, Marvel-wise, and the sort of multiverse thing that's happening, I think that there could be a world where if they do move Captain America and swap it with Deadpool, I feel like Captain America could really suffer from that, because I just feel like if it's like the Marvels and people just don't know to go see it and be into it and don't know what the hook is, then I would hate for that to happen, because I loved the Marvels a lot. And I hope that the Marvels winds up getting a ton of legs. I'm not like sentencing it to an early death or something, but I'm just saying, I think that the momentum that this builds and that like could be built, period, moving off of this without getting into any spoiler stuff, I just think Deadpool's a really perfect follow-up. And I like the idea of just kind of having time to build anticipation for that. And there's no rush, right? You know, like there's plenty of stuff coming, and I think it's great news. And to me, it makes me trust Marvel and Disney more, because they kind of have the wisdom and the self-restraint to make those calls.
Okay, what were your last what were your last critical things?
Last two critical things, and then my final question for you, and then I'm done.
Okay.
Two critical things. One, holy cow, Natalie Holt this episode. Holy cow.
Yeah.
Dude. She talked about that in our interview, and
let's go back and listen to that.
I never knew which moment she was even talking about, because there were so many in this finale.
Yeah, what was her moment?
They were like, I mean, the opening was crazy. Like, there were so many variations on like these different Loki themes, like not even just the main theme, throughout the entire episode, where it was either coming in the actual kind of Marvel card, or like the intro coming out of that, where it's really just a focus on the music, almost in the same way the end of episode 4 was.
Right.
But then throughout the whole episode, there were like all these little moments, and then obviously including the final scene with Loki.
I really loved the positive / reflective / somber version of the Loki theme.
Yeah.
Like the very Inception, Days of Future Past, like we're waking up now, that kind of vibe music.
Yeah.
Slow-mo shots. But yeah, it was the Loki theme with a few more uplifting chords. Kind of cool.
My expectations were high based on how excited Natalie was about what she was able to do here. But I just feel like Natalie, when it comes to Loki stuff, is always batting 1,000. So I think that like, but it was like a whole nother level for me. And I have to say that, because I really think that we've always said Natalie Holt is integral to this series, and it's standing out the way it does more than most MCU composers for me. Like, there are a handful that I would put on the list of like, if you remove them from the project like really suffers. And she is near the top of that list. And then here, she just like, in this episode specifically, went off, and it was incredible. So,
okay,
hopefully we can talk to her about that soon.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's The second thing, I've already kind of said this in the past, but I have to reiterate, give Moorhead and Benson Secret Wars.
Oh, and, whoa. Secret Wars. Okay. So they have Daredevil, right? Confirmed.
Yeah. No, okay. But which I'm excited about, but that feels almost more like I have not had a good answer to that question of who should direct that movie yet until now. Like in all the projects we've seen in phase four and looking back on all the other directors that are available from the other phases still that are still working on franchises, I've just never found the person that I feel so confident giving that movie to or the team until these folks. And I was talking to Candace about this. We've talked about that like weird magic that Marcus McFeely had with the Russos. And it's just, this feels like if you were to take that team and then even like you keep Waldron on and you put Waldron and Eric Martin together again, who clearly really architected this entire show. Like that to me is a team I would be so excited to see carry the Secret Wars and you know, whatever happens with King Dynasty. But like, if we're looking at what the equivalent of that kind of Infinity Saga finale team was, this is where I would put my money at this point.
I think me too. And we may be talking to him. You never know, here on Friends from Work.
Sounds cool.
Would be nice. They were like maybe going to do it, but the writer strike prevented them from, or the actor strike prevented them from doing any PR. So maybe no. Yeah, they've blown me away. And you know I love Moon Knight. Mm-hmm. So
I know. Yeah. And I'll give you that. I was like, because I loved their stuff on Moon Knight, but I was always a little bit sensitive because I liked some of the stuff in the Mohamed Diab episodes as well. And I didn't want to kind of minimize that.
For sure.
But I think that they're like, that was such an inspired choice to bring them over to this. And yep. I'm so excited to have them on Daredevil. But I think that, so I'm not minimizing that because again, I clearly trust them a lot. But I just think that, like we said, I think last week, the Russos were so suited to the kind of like paramilitary thing that was going throughout Infinity War and Endgame. Mm-hmm. And I just think that like,
yes,
the tone that they'll have to strike here,
you're gonna
these guys feel designed for.
Yeah, you're going to have directors who have that vibe, right? Like just in this hypothetical scenario, Daredevil feels like a Russo's type show.
Right, no, exactly. Now, that's exactly what I was saying.
But yeah, Secret Wars feels like they could do this now. This is their scene.
Yeah.
All right, last question to end the episode.
Okay. Yeah, last question. Just to go back to what you were saying, when we're talking about the void, because I'm thinking more and more with that Ramatut question we got and just the fact that we know they're being, or at least the ideas that they would be caught and probably pruned, I more and more feel like Ravonna is going to come into contact with a Kang in the void.
Okay.
And maybe that is like the Council of Kings, because there's something kind of there from the Avengers Forever comics. And again, this is all stuff that's going to be really... one of the reasons I'm so excited for the long break is because there's so much for us to dig into on a lot of levels. And I think it's just going to be really fun to dive into a lot of stuff like this. But the question I have for you is, if the Citadel is still situated the same way that it was in the season one finale, then if Ravonna were able to get around Eliath, assuming Eliath is still there, would she be able to basically walk up to Loki? Like, I guess my question is Ravonna, like, because the void was kind of basically the outskirts of the Citadel at the end of time. So is Ravonna like that, like a stone's throw from Loki right now? Or is that not the case anymore?
She's literally like, throwing stones at him, trying to hit him. Stop. Cut it out, you. Okay, so I think, in my opinion, the answer is yes. She is literally a stone's throw away from Loki. However, no other being has ever been able to get around Eliath. It's only because Loki has that magic and Sylvie had the enchantment that they were able to do that. So I don't think there's a tangible way as of now that Ravonna will actually get past Eliath if he does exist.
Yeah.
But maybe it's all different now. Who knows? Like, I thought it was intentionally done to show Loki doing those magic stair steps up to the same citadel, like the same looking area. Right. I thought that was intentional, which then would imply that it is still by that void. Yes. I just don't think that is possible. So theoretically, yes, she could walk up there, stab Loki, and do it all over again or something.
But that's also kind of a beautiful thing. Not for her, but like just this idea that like if she is one of the ones that like helped Kang win and kind of weaponize Eliath in the beginning, that she's now like that's the only thing keeping her from being able to kind of take the throne herself is the thing that she used to win it for He Who Remains in the first place.
But also, it wouldn't work the same anymore if she did just stab Loki, right? Because Loki is keeping his magic power. So what would happen, I guess? I guess it'd go back to it all cease to exist, I guess, right? It'd be the entire multiversal war where everything died that Kang promised if Loki gets stabbed, right?
Because I guess,
theoretically.
Because I guess
he's literally holding it all together.
Yeah. Like, so if he stops holding the branches, because he needs to be kind of, his magic has to be coursing through them. And so he has to be holding them, right? Is that the idea?
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's, well, that is the perfect place.
Well, and it goes all the way back, though, to the very first question that we've had even from the beginning of Loki season one. And we talked about already today. That video that plays with Miss Minutes explaining the multiversal war. Has that already happened? Is that what they are trying to prevent and could happen for Secret Wars and or Kang Dynasty? We really haven't gotten many more answers on that specifically. We've always heard it referenced, but we still haven't seen what that looks like. Because even all the branches being spaghettified, was that the multiversal war? Was that a war? Or they were just getting cut out? That's the kind of stuff we got to wrestle with for the next 2 months.
Yeah.
Or maybe 2 years.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to have to think about it. Something else I'm going to have to think about is what this does to the Watch Order. Cause I feel like there are some things for me to consider, which is always fun, but that's, again, we've got time and this just feels like a good time to dig into what we've gotten even just in the past couple weeks. So I'm excited. I am feeling very, very excited about where we're heading and very satisfied with the end to this mega week. And I haven't even finished Spider-Man 2 yet.
Spider-Man 2 tomorrow night, live on YouTube, 8 p.m. Next week, this episode, we haven't discussed what it's going to be yet. You and I got to figure that out, but we have so many different topics we get going on here. But like I said, I desperately need to rewatch tonight's finale and we'll have to come back from a high level and reflect on this and the Marvels probably really soon. We're also talking to John Pizzino about Spider-Man, and you and I can continue our rewatch journey, which was really fun. I mean, we were really rejuvenated by doing that right before Loki started.
When so culminating with Loki.
And then Echo drops in January, so there's not that much time before there's another show. So,
which, by the way, here's what I'm really excited about. This is going to wind up working out pretty perfectly here because we will finish out our conversations around the Marvels and Loki season 2 and Spider-Man 2. But then I think we've got the perfect amount of time to pick back up our Phase 4 rewatch with Spider-Man No Way Home.
Oh, you love to see it.
And then Hawkeye, just in time for Christmas.
You love to see it.
And then we'll take a break and come back with Echo, which comes straight out of Hawkeye, apparently.
Oh, you timed this perfectly. Look at you.
Look at that.
We lucked into it.
I'm pretty excited about that. So I think that's going to be a great way to, and I just think with the way that this ends, it's going to kind of provide a fun new context for No Way Home.
Oh, absolutely.
Now that we know more about the multiverse, we know more about the actual state of things. So
there are so many things we don't know. All these questions we just asked for the last hour. The one thing I do know, this community rules. Absolutely.
That's true.
Slaps. So if you're just finding this podcast, get involved. We're so happy to have you here. Get involved. You're going to like the way you look.
Let's grow together.
Let's grow together. Yes. We're going to make a t-shirt that says, let's grow together. You're a lawyer. Will we get sued for that? I need to figure that out.
No. Okay. if
we put the tree on it.
If we can get sued for that, then so will like every pre-K. I feel like there's no way Disney can have that that entire sentence on lock. But I do. Well, I was just texting our boy Jacoby earlier today.
Yeah, about I'm calling him this weekend.
I love it.
In the words of Dr. Disrespect, we are all the way at the tippy top, but we're not even halfway there yet. We're just getting started. Higher, further, faster, together. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right back here on Friends from Work.
For all time, always.
Grow together.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.